Hello, you have a prepaid call from...
Keith Jesperson.
Bruce Davis.
Haddon Clark.
Robert Bardo.
Breakfast, Sherman friend.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of The Lighter Side of Serial Killers. I'm your host, Keith Revere. Today, we tried to have a video chat. It wasn't really working out with the app. Some prison facilities are just horrible. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. With Pearl Fernandez at her women's facility in California, sometimes the app works, sometimes it doesn't. So we're just going to do with her audio, with a phone call. And instead of video chat, I tried. Didn't work. You know, I said sometimes it's 50-50. Sometimes even the odds even worse. You know, not in my favor getting video chats. But we tried. Didn't work. But hey, we still got the audio. So without further ado, or before I say that, if you haven't watched the documentary, I believe it's on Netflix, The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez, I would encourage you to watch it because that's what her case was about. She was sentenced and convicted of the torture and the murder of her child, Gabriel. It's not an easy watch. It's very difficult to watch. I mean, I talk to serial killers every day for years and years and years, you know, but any time there's the death of a child, and especially a case like hers, it's very difficult. But I would encourage you to go watch that documentary, and, you know, before you watch this and hear what she has to say, kind of puts things in maybe more of a perspective about what her case was. And so now let's hear from Pearl Fernandez.
Uh-oh.
Hey, there she is.
Hey,
I am
back.
There you go. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yes.
Good. Good. Let's see. Hope we get a clear connection today. So far, sounds pretty good.
Yes.
Cool. Well, let's jump into it. So I don't want to take too much of your time up. We'll just start from before. Most people, when they hear the name Pearl Fernandez, they only really know you from, you know, what they read in the paper or from the documentary. Why don't you tell everybody maybe who was Pearl Fernandez 10 years ago and who is she today?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, gosh, that's very hard to answer because, I mean, okay, I've actually changed in like a lot. Mm. Before it was a lot of drugs. No, alcohol. Now it's more like getting help and growing and getting to know me.
Good.
No.
What do you think was the biggest factor in the change? You know, was it someone or something at the prison that really helped you out and made you change?
I would have to say the groups and the women here that went through experiences and shared with me their experiences and, you know, how they changed, how they've grown.
Mm.
Yeah.
What kind of groups would that help you out the most?
I would have to say the domestic violence ones, the anger management ones, the drug ones, the AAs.
Oh, nice. And, and you said when people helped you out the most, did you find that people who went through – you know, something like a similar background as yours or similar case as yours you had that you can relate to the most that have changed themselves? Did those type of people help you out the most?
No. Different types of cases helped me out. It was, you know, it wasn't just, you know, like something like my case or anything like that. It was, you know, different people that came into my life and blessed me with a lot of wisdom.
Oh, that's good. And did you notice, like for me, like my, part of my platform is really promoting positivity, like positive reinforcement, especially in prisons. The people are showing you kindness and love and support. Where most prisons, a lot of prisons, it's all about negative, like punishment and solitary confinement. Do you find yourself the people who really showed you kindness and love, who, you know, took an interest in you, helped out the most, or you listened to them a little bit more and they helped you out more than somebody, you know, than the prison kind of you know, you better be good or else, you know, kind of idea.
No, actually, it has to deal with a lot of, I say the groups, the people have to, how would you say, you have to be there to actually talk about, you know, like drugs and everything like that. So when you talk to these women in prison and they've been through it and done it, you actually take their advice because, you know, of course, I speak to a lot of older heads. I don't hang around with a lot of youngsters. So they're the ones that actually give me more strength. Then you take the groups and then it opens their eyes to, you know, hold on.
Yeah.
Okay, hello?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It depends on the women that you hang around with, or who you source with here. Mm-hmm. I think that has a lot to do with the growth in prison because everywhere you go, it's going to be negative. Everywhere you go, you know, I could be out there. And I've gotten into, you know, danger, to say, stuff mm-hmm. out there,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's not just prison.
Now, how do you pretend? You had mentioned before to me, obviously we've known each other for a little while, that there have been times where, mm-hmm. you know, some people didn't like you and, you know, you heard about they're going to try to jump you or jump you. I mean, how do you stay safe? Obviously, you uh-huh. say safe this far. Is that something that you, just from kind of growing up on the streets, you were aware of somebody maybe wanted to come at you? Or, I mean, how do you protect yourself there, especially if guards aren't around?
I mean, it's not about protection. It's not about, okay, so I sit there and walk around with my head between my legs, as in being scared to be jumped? No. I've grown with God, and I know God is with me through the whole step of the way.
Mm-hmm. That's
good. And it's going to be danger everywhere. Like I said, you know, on the outs, I've been jumped on the outs. I've done the drugs on the outs. So nothing's changed for me, you know?
Yeah.
It's just more stronger with God.
Mm-hmm.
That's my higher power.
You were saying while you were there trying to hide the case a little bit by saying, you know, something, you were there for like a drunk driving thing. And then the guard came in, opened up the door real loud and said, I hope you have a good night's sleep. You're, you know, for a baby killer or something like that. And then said some of the girls jumped you. Something like a tin can or a tuna can, like the top of a can, a metal thing. They tried to slice you with the top of a can or something like that, or the lid of a can. But again,
no, that's not how it went. No, that's not how it went. I was sitting back with some girl named Denise, and we were in the unit. 3 days before me getting attacked, mm-hmm. I already knew that I was going to get attacked by three girls. My homegirl had already told me because I made good friends with some girl from the IE, and that's a gang. And she told me, she goes, don't worry. She goes, I'm going to get the girl that's talking shit about you. I promise you that. And I said, okay. Because I already got into like 5 or 6 fights, but not over my case, just to show that I'm worthy. I was like, arguing strikes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm walking into the chow hall. My homegirl tells me, put your back against the wall so they won't stab you. I said, okay. So I put my back against the wall. And they're walking up. I just rushed them. And I started beating them. And then that other two came from the side, and they started hitting me. That's when the one in the front sliced me on my face.
Wow.
So I have a light slice. You can't even tell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a light slice. She sliced me with a razor. And then that's when they bombed us. I didn't go down. They put that spray. I didn't go down. And then that's when they popped up the baton. That's when I went down because they hit me on my leg. I have a little hole. From the baton, that's when I went down because I wasn't going to go down without a fight.
Mm.
So it was nothing like that, but the officer opened no. Do you have them throwing little slugs like that, you know? But it feels fucked up too. It does. It feels messed up when they do that because of the fact that it's none of their business either. They're here to work, not go into anybody's business, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But,
it's amazing.
Being down with three girls, yeah, that's true.
And you even said, you even watch out for some of the women there. You had mentioned somebody that I know, Louise Turpin, that was at your facility.
Yes.
Tell that story where you actually helped her out in a situation.
That's her, the one that wasn't of her and her husband. And
exactly.
They beat the kids.
Yeah.
You talked to her?
Oh, I've known her.
I talked to her.
Oh, yeah. You tell her I said hello. I've known her for years.
Yeah, she's on B yard. Yeah, she's on B yard right now. She's in the honor dorm. When they beat her, when they beat two girls, I walked up on those two girls. And they weren't. I told him, "You ain't gonna touch her. You're not gonna touch her again," because they wanted to beat her again.
Yeah.
And they beat her with locks. They deal with locks and hurt her real bad. So I told those girls that they weren't gonna touch her.
Oh, that's good. You know? That's good.
And and she moved to the honor dorm, and I was happy that she was there because when that documentary came out with the date night, a lot of girls were telling her, "Well, you're losing weight." She lost a lot of weight. She looks good. Feels like they were telling her that that's good. She's losing weight. That she really got no food. People don't even help her. That she's good. She's starving. Like she starved her kids. Like they were telling her a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And when she went to work, but she kept on pushing. And I told her because she was sitting on the porch crying when that dateline came out. And I told her, "Look at me." I said, "I walk with my head up high because I know what I did and know what I didn't do."
Mm-hmm.
You know. And it's like, and I told her she'd be strong. I said, "I've been here for a long time already." I said, "I walk with my head up high. No matter what they tell me, or you have to bitch your baby kids, whatever." I said, "But I still walk with my head up high because I know God loves me." Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that matters, that God loves me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's like, she's a really godly woman. She's really down to earth because she moved into my room. And I had her for like a day, no, 2 days. We're baking cake together. She's learning her recipe.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we started baking. And she was a really nice lady. Yeah, very nice lady. She is in contact with her older daughter right now. That's the only one out of the kids.
Yeah.
One of her older daughters, she said, that's in college. I forgot the name. I forgot her daughter's name. But I try to reach out to my daughter, too, because my daughter, she's in college right now.
Wow.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
I told my sister to tell my daughter, you know, that I said hi and that I love her. You know, I try to pass those little messages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've known Luis for a bit.
Yeah.
Now, actually, you know, there was a documentary about you without, you know, getting any specifics about the case. Did you know that at the time? Did they even ask you to be part of it, or they just shot the documentary without you even knowing about it?
No, I didn't know that there was a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I found out through the people here that there was a documentary.
Okay.
So I didn't get the chance, the opportunity to actually come out in it. So, I mean, it sucks, but, you know, it happened. So,
did that make anything harder for you? Because from what I hear, you know, sometimes if you're a high profile case or they made a documentary about you, was that helpful or was that hurtful to you, you know, with the people there? Did they like, "Oh, hey, there's, you know, somebody was on TV," or was that kind of more detrimental? Like, "Oh, you know, look at her," you know, that kind of a deal. Was that harder or helpful for you? In prison there?
It made it more harder, but it goes for everybody, you know? It's not just my case. It goes for everybody where, you know, the case gets shown and then all of a sudden it's, "Oh, yeah, well, you remember her?" And, I mean, it goes for everybody. It's not, you know, this is prison. All the women have is to talk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
you say that
eventually it sucks because a lot of women are not mature, you know?
Yeah, so it's mostly from the younger women there. Not like we, you know, the older women there are more mature, have more time in. I guess they kind of stay a little bit more away from the drama. It's more the younger women there.
Yeah, the younger crowd.
Yeah.
You got the young crowd, and then you got the older women that are more mature, already spent time here, that don't deal with that. That will sit there and sit down and tell you, "Hey, you know what? This is where, you know, you could go wrong. This is that," you know, because of the fact that there is so much violence and drugs here, you know, and, you know, all that other stuff, all that, you know.
I mean, sad but true that however it gets in there, it's still a thing in there. And how was it for you? It's just you came back. I mean, I know a little bit about your past. I mean, even from your youth, you had a, you know, some of it was pretty tough. You know, you came from a little bit of abuse yourself and you left school young and started drugs young. How did that affect you going through all that negativity yourself? Are you able to take that and maybe help others with it? Like, "Hey, I've been through this. I've done this." Are you at the point where you can actually help other women out who maybe came from the same background and that you have growing up?
Well, I actually already have. I came out on YouTube. My play mother, Lorraine, she actually read my whole, it's sort of like, how would you say it? She read it in the congregation and it was talking about my drugs and what I lost, you know, where I don't sit there and say, "I lost my freedom." No, I lost my son, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the most important thing, to sit there and try to grow from, you know.
Yeah.
Losing a son is just horrible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually share my story with women, you know, because I was really bad into drugs and I, mm-hmm. you know, wasn't all there.
Yeah. Now, how important is your family to you today? I know you talk to your father still a lot. And what other what family members do you talk to still? You have a big family, small family?
No, it's always been small. It's always been immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
I just talked to my father and my sister, my brother-in-law. That's really it. I just, you know, I hardly don't call nobody. I just keep to myself a lot.
Yeah. They had mentioned now that we talk about Christianity a lot, too. Now, is that something, did you grow up kind of like in the church when you were younger, or is that something you started getting into once you got to the prison facility? Or he's kind of regrouped?
No. I regrouped.
Mm-hmm.
I actually regrouped. As soon as I came here, I was not really regrouping.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually into the scene. And then that's when I just said, you know what, I got to make a change. I can't sit there and do this if I ever want to go home, you know. But you fall down to you're serving so much time, you know, you don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, when I was out there in the streets, my dad always showed me, since I was a little girl, you know, he always showed me how to be closer to God. And he's always read the Bible to us. And so I just got into it here, you know.
Now, is there anything specific, certain passages of the Bible or certain parts that you really hold on to that are the most important to you, that would give you the most comfort and strength?
Yeah. Yes, Jeremiah 29:11
mm-hmm.
is my favorite verse. Yes.
And what does that say? Or paraphrase?
And it says, it's basically saying God is with us and he's not going to let us go. He's always there for us. He's not
mm-hmm.
looking out for bad. He's looking out for good, that we're going to, you know, progress and grow.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you think you find the most comfort in your Christian faith? Is that kind of gives you the most strength?
Yes, it does.
Good. Do you have a chaplain there that you go to, or do you have friends to pray with there and to a kind of fellowship, you know, in Christian things?
Actually, I was going to the chapel, but I haven't went lately.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, like, now we have to sign for ducats, so I haven't went lately.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, because mm-hmm. I barely changed rooms, so mm-hmm. it's been really busy for me. And, like, I'm working,
mm-hmm.
so it's really busy.
So do you have your own Bible there to read to, or it's come to look if you have to look up passages or, you know, give you that little strength when you need it?
Yes, I got a Bible, and I got my favorite book. It's called Calling of Jesus.
Oh, okay.
It's a devotional book, yeah.
Oh, is it like a daily devotional, one of those?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Oh, they're always good to have for sure. You had mentioned a case about a... Was it like an appeal or resentencing? What was that about? What are you looking forward to with that? Or what are the hopes with that?
The 4237 is just for resentencing, for not the actual.
Okay.
So I'm actually putting the paperwork and everything like that once again.
Mm-hmm.
See if it goes through. You know, I'm praying on that.
One question that I like to ask everybody, and everybody kind of has sometimes a different answer on it. When you hear, like, parole boards, when you come up for parole or maybe a judge talks to you, they almost always ask for you to talk about empathy. What does empathy mean to you in your life?
I think it would have to be, like, that's a very hard question. Man, I would have to say, like, alive or more,
mm-hmm.
you know.
What was your kind of process, especially, you know, with Christianity, when it talks about, you know, remorse yourself and empathy? What was kind of your process going through, you know, from really for your whole life, not just from the case, but, you know, throughout everything you've done, that we've all done, you know, in our sinful ways, you know, with Christianity being about forgiveness? What was that process like for you, kind of emotionally going through that? You know, and turning the page, so to speak.
Well,
I mean, I would have to say, like, it's been, like, since I was little, it's been really hard, you know? But I've always asked God for forgiveness and asked Him for strength. And I think that's helped me a lot.
Sure. Like, if you could go back to, like, young Pearl, you know, when you're a teenager and you said you were doing the drugs and the alcohol, what would you say to her? Not just, you know, don't do it, but what advice would you give her to kind of steer her on the right path back when she was like a teenager, you know, late teens, early 20s? What advice would you give her? Because there's a lot of people listening who have a daughter or have a friend who are going through something very similar and maybe starting to head down a bad path. What advice would you give yourself, basically?
I would have to say ask for help. You know, I've always grown up, you know, very, like, I won't sit there and ask. Especially in our family. In our family, we know to take care of our own.
Yeah.
So I would have to, you know, go on that, asking for help. Mm-hmm.
And how are you feeling today? Are you staying strong and healthy? I know you said you had a COVID lockdown for a while. I know you had COVID. I said you lost your sense of taste for a little while. I guess that was a new experience for you.
Yeah, it was awful. I was just like, I didn't even feel like I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to.
And you really couldn't taste anything?
But it gave me time. I couldn't taste nothing at all.
How about smell? Did you lose the smell, too? People say you lose the smell sometimes also.
Very lightly.
Now, like I said, the food's probably not, you know, the most delicious there. Anyway, maybe it was a good thing, depending on what you're eating over there.
Well, I don't go to the chow hall. I actually sit there and eat inside the room like you cook.
Okay.
So I don't go to the chow hall that much because the chow hall food sucks. I don't go there.
No, there were a couple. I forget the name of the YouTube page. There was a couple girls talking about you on YouTube a while ago. I saw it was all negative thing, but one of them said that she worked with you. Were you a cook at one point, or did you help do the cooking there?
No, I was working. The only time I worked was in the central kitchen. That was bakery.
It was a bakery there. Oh, that's good. Did you enjoy that, or did you like to bake?
I did enjoy the job. It was very interesting. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you have to have a GED, so I went back to school.
Okay. Are you still going to the school now?
No, I'm actually working full-time.
Oh, you are? Okay. And what kind of job do you do there?
It's an 80 worker.
What kind of worker is it? What kind of job?
It's an 80 worker. Like, you sit there and you help people. Like, you push them.
Oh, okay. Good. Oh, definitely good.
But the elderly. You're basically helping elderly.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's very nice for you, for sure. And you said as far as the food, you know, heading out there, is there like commissary? You get like the quarterly packages there at that facility? I'm pretty sure, if I remember, I did get like the Walking Horse in a couple of places, you get the quarterly packages. Do you take advantage of that at all?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
I do.
Are you a single cell? Are you in a dorm, or are you in the, do you have a single unit?
No, I'm in a unit.
Okay. And one thing, we talked a little bit about it yesterday. But I mean, you get your thoughts on it. Dana Gray, who's also at your facility, someone I've been friends with for a long time, she just sent me in the mail a condom and something I never even heard of before, DAMS. I guess, you know, some kind of contraceptive, you know, looks like a big fruit roll-up kind of thing. And, you know, they hand out condoms in a woman's facility. I posted this online, and all my followers went crazy. Like, why are they handing out a condom in a woman's facility? They didn't realize there's actually transgenders. The law passed. I think it was like SB Bill 132 or 31. I forget what it was. But how has that been for you? Have you experienced, you know, transgenders there? Because it's not so much that, like, if you're a legit transgender, I mean, you really identify as a woman and you're not attracted to women, you know, that's one thing. But from what I hear, you know, all you have to do is say you identify as a man and they have to let you in, you know, and that just opened like the floodgates of, wow, this is a little dangerous. But now that they're handing condoms out, it's almost like the facility doesn't care. So what are your thoughts on that? And have you seen almost like the dangers of like the negative side of this?
For me, we signed a petition where they did not come, but it didn't go through. Of course, they came. But I'm actually friends with a few, you know, and they're very sweet. Like, they're nice.
That's good.
So I really don't get into that issue, you know. That's like, once again, like politics. Yeah. I don't get into
politics. Probably smart. It's probably a smart thing. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, do you follow that on, like, the whole political thing and the who's going to be president and Trump and this? Do you watch it all? You don't even bother with it at all? Or is that a popular thing at your facility? Do people actually follow along? Who's a governor, who's not a governor, and who's going to be president?
Here we follow along, but not that much. You know, it's maybe just working, going to programming.
If you had the power, if you were, President Fernandez or Governor Fernandez, what changes would you like to see at your specific facility? Like, what are some of the positive and negative things that you see there? And what would you like to see change? You know, what would make that facility better for everybody?
I think that, if it was up to me, I would change the women that have already served their full time, the full sentence, and they go back to board. They go to board and they get, rejected. Like, I think that's very unfair because of the fact that being in prison is trauma itself, because you don't know the next. You don't know what they're going to do. You don't know who they are. Like, they probably had it harder than you, and you're trying to change. So, I would sit there and want to grant the women that have served their time and are doing good and making that change, Because it's very hard to make change in prison because it's just like being out in the streets, just with aggressive women,
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on, we just did a big podcast with this, with Dana Gray when she came on, talking about life without parole, basically called the other death sentence, what's really what it is. It's just a slower. I'm sure your hopes that it will be reversed too. But talk a little bit about, like you said, some of the women there who have served so much time, like decades there, who have completely changed. And would you like to see that reversed to where, hey, at least give them a chance for parole? And how much hope do you think that would bring people, even for the chance of parole?
I think that would be a good idea, because I've been across a lot of lifers that deserve to sit there and get paroled, that are just changed. And you could see it, you could feel it, the way they talk, the way they walk.
Yeah.
It's a whole different, They're not the same person, just like me. I'm not the same person, We still look the same, but we're not the same person. We've grown, we've matured, We know right from wrong is the same because, when you're young, you're just doing whatever, whatever comes to mind, but you have to go with structure now, and it's all up to that person if they want to change.
And what would you say, or what kind of, like, if you were out tomorrow or somebody, any woman in there, you said you have the structure there. They're walking the right path. They're doing good. They're staying sober. But when you get out back to the real world, that structure's gone. So now you can do anything you want. What would you do to kind of keep that structure? Or what would you recommend to somebody coming out that, hey, we got to keep some kind of a structure here because no one's going to be looking over your shoulder. Sometimes you got to watch out for yourself. What do you think? What advice would you give somebody coming out to keep that structure?
You can't tell that person what to do. They gotta want to do it. They gotta do it on their own. You know what I mean? Anybody could sit there and talk.
Yeah, definitely a good point. I think once they get that revelation in their heart, I guess that's like number one. Like, I want to change. I want to be better. And then I guess, not that it wouldn't matter. Drugs will still be out there, alcohol, any other things you can get in trouble with. But yeah, obviously faith is strong too. But yeah, I can see that, that first most important thing is the change in their heart. How quick did that happen for you? Like, obviously once you got to the facility, did you have to come in there kind of like hard as a rock to kind of, hey, I don't know what's going on. Or how long did it take for you to really?
When I first came, it took me a while to change, because the people that I was around, it really goes with, when I came, I didn't even know what my sentence was. My attorney didn't tell me what an AWOP was. So I didn't even know what that was. I thought it was just a lifer. I was going to sit there and do my time and, get out and, I learned it here in a group what it was. And it was like I was resentenced all over again because when you make that change, it like really hits you, So.
How long did it take for you to really wanting to change, but I'm sure there's that initial, I don't know if it's fear, anxiety, once you got there, finding out what LWOP really was, to really, I don't know if I can use the word settle in, but almost come to grips with what it is. Hey, I got to change. I want to do better. How was that like? Did it happen in the first few months, first year? How long did it take before you really started getting that into your heart where, you know, I think I want to get some help here and try to be a better person? How long was that? Did that take for you?
For me, it took a while. And then I decided, well, a lot of people tell me, like, hey, you know what? You're going to go home. You know, you're going home. Because, you know, of course, everything's changing.
Yeah.
So I basically had to make a change. I basically was like, you know what? They're right. You know, I can't sit there and feel sorry for myself and be like, oh, fuck it. You know, like, I can't go sit there and do all that, you know? So I think, yeah, it takes you time. It takes everybody time to sit there and change. And you know, like I said, it really depends on the person, you know, if you want to grow, if you take the advice, if you take the classes and you take it seriously.
And is there anything that you want, you know, to, if you have like the platform, you know, you have the next couple of minutes to yourself, what would you want to tell everybody? Really about who you are. Yeah, obviously, you know, there's people have one image of, you know, who you are with the case and all that, but what would you like to say to everybody, you know, about change in your life?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I believe I like to keep to myself. Mm-hmm. So I really don't care what anybody says because they're not God, you know? So I really don't have no answer for that question, you know, because everybody sins, you know.
All right. Well, there you have her. My conversation with Pearl Fernandez. Now, she didn't want to talk about the case, like real, you know, detailed about the case. I've talked to her about it personally, as I've known her and been talking to her for a while now. But I also want to respect her wishes and not get into that. But, you know, she's going into detail about, you know, what happened, and especially with the caseworkers, her negative feeling towards them, because they said, you know, they could have prevented ever anything. Their charges were brought against them, which I was happy to see. But then the charges were dropped. About all the caseworkers, I can't even fathom how the cases were dropped against them. At least something should have happened, but that's basically nothing. But if you haven't seen the documentary, The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez, it was a case. If you're not familiar with it, you'll go back and watch that documentary. Then, you know, come revisit this conversation with Pearl. When anytime you have a case of child abuse, torture, and murder, it's actually very delicate. We touched a little bit about the trials that she has had in prison. And some of you might think, good, you know, she tortured and killed her child. It's understandable. You know, part of the podcast and what I do is to give them a voice and a platform, talk about a little bit of who they are, because some of them, like, probably, like, I don't think she's ever spoken really publicly before, as a lot of my guests do. So like them, hate them, or just want to learn about them or hear from them and maybe study their minds or whatever it may be. That's kind of part of the reason why I do and why the people I have on the show. So I hope you enjoyed or learned maybe something from her. Maybe you're angry hearing from her. Maybe you're happy, but you get to hear from somebody who's never really spoken publicly like this before. But anyway, that was Pearl Fernandez. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. We have a bunch of new guests coming up. Tiffany Cole, who at one point, not any longer, she's not even on death row anymore, but she was the youngest woman on death row, along with Amelia Carr. I think she was like a 2020. I think it was Diane Sawyer, I believe, did an interview with both of them together, Amelia Carr and Tiffany Cole. I don't think they're friends anymore. They're not housed at the same facility. But Tiffany, I've known for years and years and years. I just got approved for a video chat. So once we hook that up, we'll be doing that. She's real fun to talk to. This will be a blast to talk to her and a bunch of other people for the audio podcast and for the video podcast. We couldn't hook up the video chat with Pearl. We tried it, and the GTL app is wonky. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So we just decided to do the audio one, and obviously I still do a video one here, you know, just with pictures and stuff are up. So I have something for this page too, a little more content. So again, thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. And like I said, whatever your feelings are towards Pearl, again, I just give this platform just to hear from them themselves, whether you believe everything they say or you don't believe a word that they say. at least you can hear from them, not just what a documentary says about them, whether it's truthful or not truthful from the documentary side. At least we get to hear from them directly. So I hope you enjoyed it, and we got a lot more to come. Until next time, see ya.